This is the Bulls Talk Podcast presented by Coors Light. I'm Casey Johnson, joined today by my NBC Sports Chicago teammates, Rob Schaefer and Tony Gill. Coming up on the show, we are going to explore yet again the restricted free agency of Lauri Markkanen. When will it end? How will it end? We also give our predictions on the over-under for the Bulls' regular season win total from our friends at PointsBet. And we do a little bit of a schedule analysis for the 21-22 season.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Born in the Rockies, Coors Light is lagered cold for a crisp, clean taste. Filtered cold to ensure clarity and brightness. And packaged cold for peak refreshment. Because those who thirst for more deserve the world's most refreshing beer.
All right, welcome into another edition of the Bulls Talk Podcast. I'm here with Rob Schaefer and Tony Gill. We are Jason Goff-less today, but he'll be back for the next episode, I'm sure. We are in the official dog days. Well, what should be the dog days of August. But as we all know, the NBA calendar is off kilter, out of rhythm. Feels like there hasn't been a break in a long time, and particularly so for the team that we are so fortunate to cover, the Bulls. They have two significant news items left on their docket. One of the few teams that has two significant news stories left on their docket. Not that I'm bitter or anything, but that, of course, would be the Lauri Markkanen restricted free agency resolution. And also, at some point, the league is going to be announcing its findings into the tampering investigation regarding Lonzo Ball. There's been no noise, to be clear, of that deal being rescinded. That would be an absolute nightmare and mess at this point. If the Bulls, and I want to stress if, because all teams are presumed innocent until found guilty. If there is some wrongdoing discovered, most people that I've talked to assume there'll be some sort of draft capital or monetary penalty incurred. So we'll see how that plays out. So that's still hanging over the Bulls. And also, quite frankly, guys, as we know, they haven't finished filling out their roster. I believe they're at 12 contracts. Rob, you can correct me if I'm wrong there. So they need some power forwards. And what better way to lead into the Lauri Markkanen discussion than that? Because they're thin at number four, at the position four, and Lauri Markkanen's restricted free agency is hanging out there. So, Rob, I'll throw it to you before I get into what I know about the latest. But let's say it plays out where Lauri Markkanen is back on the Bulls. How do you think he fits this roster?
Well, on paper, at least, KC, he fills a position of need. We've covered that in our many in the many laps that we've run around this Lauri Markkanen story. We've covered that a few times. I'm just looking at my sheet now, and not including Devon Dotson's two-way contract, the Bulls are at 12 right now. And I'm just looking at the way I have the depth chart laid out. You have Lonzo and Caruso at the one, LaVine, Kobe at the two, DeRozan, Troy Brown Jr., Devontae Green at the three. Positions are obviously all loose here. Nikola Vucevic, Tony Bradley, and Marko Simonovic at the five. And then at the four, I have Patrick Williams / three question marks. So that to me not only kind of illustrates the uncertainty of the position, but also to me the urgency of it, because I get it. It's 2021. Basketball is positionless. I think the Bulls have a pretty good answer at the four, at the starting power forward spot, and Patrick Williams. I think that position is going to accentuate a lot of his strengths, and I think it's ultimately going to be his best position long term in the NBA. But behind him, when you do have a guy in DeMar DeRozan who played a lot of four last year. And, maybe Marko Simonovic can play a little bit of four at the NBA level, but we're still not even sure that he's a rotation player at this point. He obviously was a second-round pick in 2020. I see backup forwards being a huge, huge position of need. So I think Lowry fills that. He certainly does a lot to satisfy the new regime and Billy's desire to put a ton of shooting on the floor, a ton of offensive utility on the floor.
This guy is someone who shot 40% from three on seven attempts a year last year for all the other shortcomings. So all that's great. He obviously brings size. The thing that he doesn't satisfy to me is I'd like someone a little bit more defensive minded there. But at this point in the offseason, we talked about this in our mailbag last week. It's just pretty slim pickings if you want to find someone who's going to move the needle or transform you entirely. I'll continue to say every time I'm asked about this, I'll continue to say Paul Millsap is my favorite kind of vet minimum option of the backup fours. But to me, I mean, that's kind of the best option that you're looking at. And he's reported to, you know, have interest from the Nets and other kind of championship contender people like that. So we'll see. I still think it's in the best interest, though, of the Bulls, if they can do it, to find a taker for Lowry and get anything back. Because at this point, the qualifying offer, it's a Band-Aid. It's a nice little patch on an area you need on the roster. But to have him on an expiring contract and destined for unrestricted free agency next offseason, I'd rather recoup any level of draft capital or any kind of contributor there for this year. And then just kind of move forward. Cause it just seems like the Lowry thing has run its course at this point, but I guess we'll see, because at this point, if something hasn't been done at this point, it just gets more and more likely every day that that is the ultimate outcome, even if I think it's an unideal one.
Yeah. So last week, before I took a few days to get away, I kind of summed up where kind of things stand with the situation and, you know, as we all know, I mean, the Bulls are pretty much in the driver's seat right now because Lowry did not go get an offer sheet from a team with cap space. And if you're a restricted free agent and you want to be elsewhere, it's incumbent upon you to do that and place your current employer in a position where they have to decide whether or not they want to match that offer. With cap space dried up around the league, it's obvious now that the Bulls would have to cooperate in any sign and trade transactions. So Lowry is in a situation where he needs the Bulls' cooperation. And as I keep saying, they're thin at four. And, you know, 7 foot big who shot 40% from three coming off the bench isn't that unattractive an option. So they can probably be as selective and as picky as they want to be. Not fun for Lowry because he's made it clear he wants to be elsewhere, both in comments to me in his exit interview and then more strongly to a Finnish publication recently. So just a tricky situation. And this is why restricted free agency can be as messy as this one kind of seems to have been. Tony, you look like you have something important to say.
Yeah, no, I just had a question that the Bulls are in the driver's seat with Lauri Markkanen. Are they not moved by the awkwardness and potential weirdness it could have in the locker room by having Lauri return? Again, they are in the driver's seat. They are, you know, the biggest mover in all of this. But is there something to, like, I don't want this type of energy in this new locker room around these new guys that are moving on, knowing that he's not going to be here the next year? Why would you want that just on the premise of, well, this is just business, he should go out and do his job because it best serves him? But it's still a little bit weird when it seems like the organization and everybody in that locker room has kind of mentally decided that Lowry is moving on. And Lowry, it seemed like, has mentally decided that he will move on. But it's just not the case. So what do you guys think about how both management and organization feels about that?
Fantastic question. I can speak to it pretty authoritatively. And also there are a lot of layers to that answer and a great point, because on the one hand, you've got all this positive momentum, obviously, with the significant changes this roster has undergone. And do you want to run the risk of bringing in some negative energy to that situation? Now, you do touch on the most critical point. I mean, Lowry would be playing for a contract. So for him to come back and pout and mope and, you know, not be a team player, you know, probably not the best strategy for him, and probably one that the Bulls are kind of banking on, quite frankly. And then also, you know, the Bulls feel like they've been upfront with Lowry from the jump with his situation. You know, they made him a what they considered a pretty strong contract extension offer before last season. It was his right to turn it down and seek greener pastures or more lucrative offers. And then they feel like they've communicated well throughout the process with him, particularly in case of Coach Billy Donovan, about his role changing and what they need from him, that kind of stuff. Now, there's always two sides to every story. So on the flip side of that, Lauri Markkanen's like, well, you tried to trade me in March for Lonzo Ball. So it's like, you know, what the hell? And I was a starter, and then I came off the bench. So it is a complex, multi-layered answer. The last thing I'll say about it is this. You know, there are no guarantees in the NBA, right? And here's the situation I'm going to point to. Bobby Portis turned down a significant contract extension with the Bulls. Thought he was going to get more money. It didn't work out for him. He did get that decent 1 year annual salary from the Knicks at $15 million. Then what went elsewhere. Now he signs a lower level deal with the Bucks, finds an incredible niche, completely beloved, wins a championship, could have gotten more money elsewhere, but chose to stay for less money because he's in such a great situation. I'm not saying this is going to happen. I'm just saying the NBA takes unexpected twists and turns. Let's just play this out hypothetically. Lauri Markkanen returns on the qualifying offer, comes off the bench, wins sixth man of the year. The Bulls win 60 games and win the championship. Again, I'm getting out over my skis here, but I'm just telling you, these are the things you don't know. Then all of a sudden, Lowry's like, oh, I love it here. The Bulls offer him an extension after next year. You know, I mean, so again, I'm not saying all this is.
It sounds like a fun couple months for us, KC. If that,
yeah, there you go. So this is that would be my multi-layered answer to your question. And as with everything, there's tons of shades of gray. There's two sides to every story. But you strike to the heart of what's going on here. There's, you know, do you want to run that risk? And the Bulls would have to feel pretty strong in their infrastructure to run that risk. And my sense is that the Bulls do feel strong in that infrastructure.
Yeah, and the only thing I'd add to that, and that hits on, Casey, that answer hits on pretty much every aspect and layer of the situation. But I agree, Tony. I think about that all the time, just the level of awkwardness and how if we're thinking about that, obviously the people in charge of this thing have to be considering it too. Mm-hmm. But, you know, from a negotiating perspective, and the Bulls are in negotiating mode at this point as it relates to the Lowry thing, it does them no good to project any level of uncertainty. It's like, to me, it seems like it's like a game of chicken and they have to project a level of confidence that, hey, if we have to, we still have a useful NBA player that we could bring off the bench that fills a position of need. And we don't care about running down the qualifying offer with him, especially because they're clearly so focused on winning this year. So I would guess that no matter how they feel internally about it, they're going to project strength and confidence on it because that just helps them from a negotiating perspective. And all right. So I don't even know what to think though, man. I mean, for so long, it was kind of like, I was, you know, the qualifying offer, it's a distant possibility, but there's no way. Right. But like I said earlier, man, the more days that go by, it just feels increasingly likely. It's hard to believe, but it's not unbelievable at this point.
I mean, that media day is going to be crazy, right? It's a large market coming out before, you know, the media and after telling the Finnish media, yeah, I'm done in Chicago. Welcome back to Chicago. Like that will be an interesting media day for sure.
I'll just say this. It's happened before in pro sports where people have said something and they've had to come back. But we'll see how it plays out. It's definitely a fluid and not concluded story. And it's remarkable that we just extracted a coherent and somewhat interesting segment on a story that we have been covering for as long as we have. So kudos to us, if I may say so ourselves. By the time this airs, the whole story will have flipped and we'll have to
David
or
that'd be great too. That'd be
yeah,
great
there too. You go. So that wraps up that and Lonzo, because there's no news on Lonzo, but we expect that. I should say not Lonzo, but the Lonzo tampering situation.
Although we should add, Casey, that is the dynamic to this thing where not only have the Bulls traded, you know, three future first round picks, including the one in the draft that just passed, the specter of that. And again, we don't know how it's going to turn out, but the specter of that investigation potentially stripping more draft capital, probably speculatively speaking, increases the urgency to get draft capital back for Lowry. That is the dynamic of this story, right? So they are a little interconnected in that way.
Great call. And you can take out the word speculatively. I know for a fact from my conversations with people associated with the situation and also just talking to other execs I know around the league that, I mean, everyone in the league knows the Bulls are trying to get draft capital from Mark Markkanen. So, you're right. They're interconnected in that sense.
Okay. It's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, let's move on to Rob. You always plug our sponsor because I always mess it up. So we have a sponsor, PointsBet, right?
Oh, yeah, our partners over at PointsBet. We're going to talk for a few minutes about some of the various props related to the Bulls for this upcoming season. They do a great job over PointsBet. Download their app, pointsbet.com, I believe. You could sign up and get a look at, you know, not only daily lines and things like that, but also NBA futures. So that's where we're pulling this segment from. Let me get it up on my phone. The first one we could talk about, which has shifted actually, this over-under from where it was a couple weeks ago, which makes sense because I saw it and my eyebrows went up immediately, even relative to some, the Bulls over under win total projection has been across a couple different books. This one to me struck me as particularly worth targeting. And now it's adjusted a little bit, but PointsBet has the Bulls over under line for wins the 2021-2022 NBA season, which, reminder, will be the first season in the last three seasons that is back to a full 82 game slate. So keep that in mind when you're looking at win totals and things like that. They have the Bulls over under at 41.5. So what you're basically betting with that is if you're under, you're thinking the Bulls are a 500 team or below. You're thinking they're 41-41 or worse in an Eastern Conference that is admittedly more talented and deeper than it has been in quite some time. If you go over, you think they're likely going to be an above 500 team. You're thinking 42-39 or better, or sorry, 42-31 or better. Wait, 42-40 or better. Oh my God. I don't know how my brain is this fried on a Monday afternoon, but, so my instinct looking at that, I see the Bulls as 41-45 wins somewhere in that range. But I think the most likely outcomes are pretty much all slightly above 500 within shouting distance, but you know, to get into that 5-7 Eastern Conference seeding range, which is where I see their most likely window, I could see them finishing from anywhere to 41-45 wins. To me, I even seeing 41.5, it's up from points bet headed at 39.5 a couple weeks ago. Even 41.5 strikes me as a pretty easy over to smash. But I'm curious, what's your guys' initial impressions seeing that number?
My bigger initial impression, and you know, I know that we're associated with points bet, so that's the one we're focused on. But I mean, just across the board, that's where a lot of that books and odds. I'm not a gambler at all, so I don't even know what I'm talking about. But the emails I get from PR people, from you know, odds makers, books makers, what have you, have all kind of the Bulls in that range. And you know, it's amazing because the fandom, at least the stuff that comes across my register, all the optimism and excitement has them feel like a 50 win team, you know? So like the discrepancy is pretty large. I'm kind of probably sounds like I'm more along the lines of your thinking, Rob. I don't see them as a 50 win team, but I certainly see them as a better than a 500 team. So I think I'm, you know, you got to see how the roster finish in final form, but I kind of see them in that mid 40 range. And I know the schedule came out last week. And there are some difficult stretches there, but I just think offensively, there's just going to be so much firepower and so much potential for Billy Donovan to use different lineups that I think they're going to just be able to score a lot of people. Obviously, defensively will be a big question mark for this team, but I think there's going to be a lot of nights where they just flat out outscore people. And I think it's going to be another difficult year. I don't know what the COVID protocols or testing is going to be, but it could be another, it's just going to be another grueling year because of the disruption of the NBA calendar. You know, we're coming up on the third season where just rhythms are off. And I think if you're offensively minded, which I think the Bulls will be, I think you're going to be able to take advantage of some teams, schedule victories, that kind of stuff. So I probably have them in that 44, 45 win range. So I would probably be betting the over if I were a gambling man. Tony?
Especially Casey, I hate to say it, but a factor in that kind of abridged and, or so I should say abridged offseason, kind of throwing off the rhythm of the NBA regular season again. I mean, not many of the Bulls' key players are coming off deep playoff runs. So you would hope that they're, you know, refreshed and refurbished and things like that. Maybe that's a factor. Tony, what do you think?
I think that the initial number that they started out with, that people were just hitting the over repeatedly on that to get it up to 41.5. But if I had to pick one, I think I would say over, but not by much. You know, maybe I have them like in the 42, you know, 43 range, of winnable games. Because again, like we talked about it, Rob, it's like, I can't say for sure what this team is going to be and what it is. I thought that they were good enough last year to be in the play-in, and obviously that didn't happen. And it wasn't just due to the fact that, you know, obviously Zach was in the protocol, and injuries kind of piled up toward the end there, but they didn't look all that great in the beginning either. So they just added 2-3 more key pieces to fit in there. And we don't, you know, I'm just super interested tactically what it's going to look like and schematically what it's going to look like. That, I think at that point, the thing that intrigues me most. But I think the defense, or lack thereof, is a real thing that they're going to have to figure out. But I like KC's answer that they're just going to, some nights, they're just going to outscore people. Like, no matter what scheme that they're playing in, Zach is going to be hot. If two of the guys are really, really hot, you know, in a game, like, they're just going to outscore people some games. So, yeah, I would say that they're above 500 team, but not by the whole lot. They're just like right about there. Cause I think that some nights the defense is just going to be like, what are we doing out here? I think that's when they're going to catch them on some nights, but yeah, I think the over on that is pretty solid.
Yeah. I align with you guys on that. And this can be a good pivot into talking schedule for a second, because Tony, you mentioned something that I've, you know, beaten into the ground ever since all these additions were made, that we can spin ourselves in circles talking about how well the pieces fit on paper, and they do fit on paper. But just the way that this Bulls team has had expectations kind of crescendo before the beginning of each of the last two seasons, and then the way that the actual seasons have played out, I just am not – I know this Bulls team is completely different than anything – talent-wise than anything that has been trotted out since the rebuild started. But I still don't feel good about really, you know, identifying or analyzing the problem areas or the improvement areas or even the strength areas of this team until we see them on the court and see them against good competition. And the reason that I say this could be a good schedule pivot is because the schedule did come out late last week for the regular season, and the Bulls get a gut check pretty immediately.
November, the entire month of November.
Yeah. So the first, like, the first five games here, you open the season at Detroit, home for New Orleans, home for Detroit, at Toronto, home for New York. That's five games. Mm-hmm. To me, the way that the expectations on this team, with it being assembled the way that it is, 4-1. In those five games, does that feel fair?
What they have to do to make us feel like this is going to be okay?
Pretty much. Well, and it adds to it. Let me give you the next 13 games after that. And this starts on October 30th, and it ends on November 21st. Home for Utah, at Celtics, at Sixers, home for the Sixers, home for the Nets, home for the Mavericks, at the Warriors, West Coast trip here, at the Warriors, once, at Clippers, at Lakers, at Trailblazers, at Nuggets, home for the Knicks. So that right there is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. That's 12 games on top of the original five that I said 4-1 should be an expectation out of. That's your first 16 games of the season right there. And I think obviously there's going to take some time for chemistry and them to find out what's working and what's not. But after those 16 games, I feel like we're going to have something, a little bit more clarity on what this team actually is than we do, obviously, sitting here right now and kind of speculating about how things are going to fit together and whatnot. So I actually think that's something to look forward to, seeing this team get a test like that and a pretty grueling West Coast trip that early in the season. Because it should just give us an idea of what we're in for and what is reasonable to expect for the rest of the season. I think coming out of, given that our expectations for the entire season, us three in this Zoom room, seem to be, you know, a little bit above 500, I would like to see them end that stretch 10-6, 9-7, 8-8, you know, at 500 or a little bit above. And if you can finish a grueling stretch like that at that on, you know, on that side of history to a degree, that would make me a little bit more encouraged about them being a legit, like, middle of the conference, well above 500 team. Because underrated aspect of this whole thing, and I tweeted this out on Friday, I think, the Bulls have not been above 500 for even one game, like, at any point in the season. They haven't been above 500 since March 2nd, 2017. Like, even being above 500 for any stretch of a season, even if it's you win the Pistons game to start the season, then you immediately go to 1-1, like, there is significance to that. So for me, those first 16 games will be huge for me. I'd like to see them be at or a little bit above 500. And I think, you know, forecasting growth throughout the season will be a little bit easier for there. But I'll be fascinated. I think that's going to be a really interesting start to the season. And let us know what's going on right out of the gate.
Great call. I would just add, actually, maybe make it 17 games. And here's why. Because there's actually a back-to-back. So you stop that stretch with Knicks at Bulls on the 20th.
Oh, you're right. Yeah.
They got a back-to-back with the Pacers, which a lot of people have pegged kind of right around where the Bulls are going to be as one of those swing teams in the East. So, and that's a back-to-back. On the favorable side, it's two home games, Knicks and Bulls. But anyway, 17 games. Yeah.
Good call.
But I would say this, if they're like, so let's say they're 11-6, 10-7. If they do that, then you, I think, have to adjust and maybe say this is a 50-win team, because I see this, that stretch of schedule after those first four or five games as starting with that Utah game, I see that as an incredibly daunting stretch. That's what, 12, 13 games you said? I mean, is anybody going to be surprised if they go 4-8 in that stretch? I mean, that's where we're going to know. That's where we're going to know who this team is, because that's a really, really difficult schedule stretch, although who knows where Damian Lillard will be playing by then. I'm just kidding. He'll be playing.
If they can win the ones that they're supposed to in that first, like, initial five games, so let's say you go 4-1, and then you go that, you go 4-8 over that 13 game stretch, you know, you might not be riled up completely, like, you might not be totally fired up, but you'd be 8-9 after what's going to be potentially the toughest stretch of schedule of the year right out the gate. And I say potentially because it's kind of hard to forecast, like, there's a tough West Coast trip later on in the year, but it's just hard to forecast much further than a month into the season when we just don't know what all these teams are going to look like in practice yet. But
well, there's an old adage in the NBA that you kind of know what team you're going to be that season after 20 games, and so we're kind of already up to the 20 game point.
Quarter point, yeah. You know, quarter point of the season.
Yeah. So, all right.
Yeah, I mean,
Rod, Tony.
Yeah, I think that list of games, it lets me know that all those little losses, right? Those close losses to those bad teams and to those teams that they're just as good as, like, there's no more, you know, no matter how early they are, like, if it's that Detroit one, those Detroit games early on, they gotta get those.
Yeah.
Like, they can't afford on these swing games and these games that they're favored to win. They can't afford to not win those games anymore.
Correct.
Just because, like, we're not going to know how are they going to be like with the tough teams in those tough stretches.
Well said. The point, summarizing that point, because it's spot on, is with what they've cashed in, you can't. You've got to win all the take care of business games now. You can't. Mm-hmm. You can't. I mean, obviously, there's going to be 1-3 over the course of an 82 game schedule.
82 games.
Like, oh man, that was a bad loss, right? But, like, you cannot have. Remember how many times we talked about what, you know, the team picture for worst loss of last season is getting crowded. I mean, it's like, which loss is the worst, right? You can't have those anymore. You can't. You've pushed your chips in to win now, to improve this team significantly. I'm not saying you're not positioned for future success, although you have spent a lot of draft capital, because you also have young talent coming up in, you know, Patrick Williams and Lonzo Ball, and Zach LaVine is straddling kind of the two camps. But you can't go out and do what they did this offseason and then you know, lay eggs against winnable teams. You've just got to go out and just, you know, and I'm not, make it clear, I'm not comparing this to the Dynasty Air Bowls, but that was early in my, obviously, my career and my initial exposure to B. And that was the amazing thing about those Dynasty Air teams. They just were like methodical, just demoralizing and destroying those opponents. And check, that one's done. Okay, check, next one, you know. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that this seems like anywhere near that level. I'm just saying you got to have that mindset, like you say, Tony. All right, Pistons road, let's go. You got to just win that game by, you know, 8 to 12 points. Let's go. So I agree with you on that.
Yeah, and to your point, no more of those swing losses, no more of those, you know, is this loss the worst of the season? Is this one? Moral victories, too. I mean, remember that West Coast trip from the beginning of last season? Like, that type of, what they go 1-3 on that West Coast trip against the Blazers, mm-hmm. Kings, and then both L.A. teams. There were a lot of good vibes around this team at that point, and I think deservedly so, because it was a largely returned roster from the 22-win team, and they were hanging with the best teams in basketball and looked just a lot better in a number of kind of subtle areas. That doesn't really fly this year either. A lot of these games have to be wins, or a lot of those games have to be wins to, you know, warrant legitimate optimism or legit kind of feel good, you know, vibes around the team. So yeah, that 17 games right there, I think like 8 and 9, it all depends how it happens. Like maybe injuries, nuke the whole thing. Like who knows? But I think to me, just looking at that on paper at this point in the offseason, like 8 and 9 in that stretch is probably at the floor where I would say, all right, you know, they could still be the team that they're kind of supposed to be, or that I would expect them to be with their level of talent. But you know, if there's a familiar feeling from the last couple of years, Bulls record after those games, you know, alarm bells start to sound a little bit. Do you guys have anything else on the schedule? It's tough because it is back to normal. That's good to see.
TNT Bulls are back, baby.
No, not technically.
Wasn't that a home thing, the TNT?
Yeah, it's like it's some exact it does not, they are on TNT, but it's not, does not meet the TNT specificity winning streak requirement, okay?
What is the actual streak at this point? Is it still alive?
It's been so long, I don't know. It is still alive. They haven't been on in so many years. I believe it's a Thursday night home. I don't know. Ask Jason Pat, who runs, you know, whatever he runs.
Yeah, we should hit a Pat about that. That's funny. But yeah, I think it's road against the Grizzlies, which should be a great game. I can run through quickly. I did do something for NBCSportsChicago.com with kind of like some games to circle in that stretch. You know, I talk about a lot of the games that we have here. October 22nd is the home opener against the Pelicans. Obviously, we see Zion at the United Center. Fans, I don't know exactly what capacity they're going to be back at this point, but to have a much fuller United Center than we saw at any point last year and have Zion in town. Lonzo revenge game against the Pelicans potential. Like that game is going to be a ton of fun on October 22nd. I'm really looking forward to that. We mentioned a couple of these November 8th against the Nets. That's at home. We never saw the Nets big three at full strength as Bulls people. They played a couple times down the stretch, but I think it was either only Kyrie or Kyrie and Durant. And they're never all three of them all together. November 12th at Golden State Warriors during that West Coast swing. Lakers, same thing. And then January 21st against the Bucks in Milwaukee. There's another little subtle thing, right? That used to be a rivalry. That used to be a rivalry that the Bulls dominated. And let's see if their roster overhaul this offseason and bleeding back into last season can get them closer to the level of the defending champs. Because I think the Bulls had a streak of like 12 straight losses or something against the Bucks before that kind of I don't know what to call it other than reserve laden, kind of like both teams kind of trying anything that they could to not stumble backwards into a win. And then the Bulls eventually won in the last game of the regular season last year. I think that broke a streak of 12 straight Bucks wins in that series. January 28th, they visit the Spurs. That's DeMar's first time back in San Antonio. If Thad Young is still Spur at that point, that'll also be the first time Bulls fans see Thad Young in his new digs. That'd be kind of cool. And then, you know, I just think every game against these three teams specifically, the Knicks, the Heat, and the Celtics, all kind of old teams that the Bulls used to have at various points in their history, a pretty heated rivalry with. All three of those teams to me are in that 5-7 vicinity in the East. They're all going to be jockeying for position all year long. And if the Bulls want to come out on top of that, all of those head-to-head matchups are going to matter and should be exciting. I think all those teams, if not exactly equally matched, are evenly matched enough that each of those games should have a fun, different rhythm to it, and they should trade blows there. So all three, four matchups apiece with those three teams should be fun too. But like I said, when we were talking about the initial stretch of schedule there, it's just hard. It's hard to get too deep in the weeds past late November, just because you never know with injuries. You never know if teams are going to underperform or overperform. We got to see how the Eastern Conference landscape lays out, and then we'll know for sure kind of moving forward into the second half of the season and everything like that, which games are going to be the most impactful for these Bulls as they look to snap their four-year playoff drought. Enters the season, the third longest active drought in basketball. So should be fun to watch them try to get off that schneid.
All right. Anything else, guys? I think we've kind of covered it for late August dog days of the offseason, right?
33 minutes, KC. How proud are you of us?
Very. So we want to thank you for listening to the Bulls Talk podcast. We'll be back hopefully with Jason later this week. We hope you enjoyed the Bulls Talk podcast presented by Coors Light. Find us on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Subscribe if you like the show. Feel free to rate and review us. New episodes are ready every Tuesday and Friday morning.